On RN and Radio Australia, you're with The Rhythm Divine, where spirituality meets music, with Geoff Wood.
He was just all over the guitar, and it, you know, impressed me mightily.
For a while, I thought, you know, there's two guitar players here.
It was unbelievable. It was meeting a big star, it really was. It's like meeting Elvis, only better. Elvis didn't finger pick. If I had
my way. Bob Dylan may be considered the musical heavyweight champion of the world, but even legends have to learn their trade from someone. In Dylan's case, one of his influences was the blind ragtime and gospel musician, the Reverend Gary Davis, a singing street preacher, Baptist minister, and catalyst for the 1960s folk revival, whose story has been told in a new album and documentary film by the American guitarist Woody Mann.
I'd always ask him, can you play me a blues? And he'd always say, is my wife around? Where is she around? You know. But sometimes when he didn't realize it, he'd be playing a blues and she'd walk in and says, don't you be playing that for that boy, you know. Oh, glory, how happy I am. Oh, glory, how happy I am. My soul will wash.
G'day and a warm welcome to you as we hear the little-known story of a blind singing street preacher, the Reverend Gary Davis, a guitar evangelist who travelled from tobacco warehouses in the rural south of the US to the streets of Harlem with his unique brand of ragtime gospel music. Born in 1896 in South Carolina, Blind Gary Davis, as he was known, was an itinerant ragtime and blues singer, until he was ordained a Baptist minister in 1937. He gave up the blues for religious music, moved to New York City, and tasted a few brief years of success with the folk music revival of the 1960s, where he influenced musicians like Pete Seeger, Peter Paul and Mary, Donovan, Bob Ware from The Grateful Dead, Bob Dylan, and many others. The Reverend Davis also took in music students, and one of those was Woody Mann, who studied with Davis in New York City until his death in 1972. Well, these days, Woody is a renowned guitarist, teacher, recording artist, and filmmaker, whose documentary film on the life and music of the Reverend Gary Davis, Harlem Street Singer, opens in New York this week. I caught up with Woody Mann at the National Folk Festival recently in Canberra, where he began by playing his new signature Martin Steel String acoustic, the Woody Mann guitar.
Hi, I'm Woody Mann, and it's great to be here at the National Folk Festival, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you all.
Beautiful. And it's so cold, I'm amazed your fingers are still working.
Me too. Me too.
Woody, you started learning acoustic guitar with one of the best, the Reverend Gary Davis, when you were a young bloke, and he was towards the end of his life, I think, in the late 60s and early 70s, up until his death in 72. So tell me about meeting the Reverend Gary Davis.
Sure. Well, I was in New York, like you said, and I was looking for a guitar teacher playing folk music and learning from whatever books and tab books I could find and records. And there was a few songs going around New York, songs like Candyman and Cocaine Blues and tunes like that. And I heard Reverend Davis, I heard his name associated with those tunes. And basically I just called him up out of the phone book. I couldn't find a guitar teacher. And I went to the phone book and looked up Reverend Davis, and his wife Annie answered the phone. And I just said, is this Reverend Davis, the guy who wrote Candyman? And she said, yes. I said, can I come over? And I went over there, and I really wasn't familiar with his music. I just knew he wrote Candyman. But when I went to his house and I heard him play, he started playing this, you know, big old, all this big ragtime kind of music. And I just flipped out. I said, what is that? And he just said, I call that ragtime. And I said, well, can you teach me that? And he said, yeah. So I went back for lessons, and it was a real period of discovery, because like I said, I didn't know what he did. And he said, have you ever heard the Hesitation Blues or Death and Have No Mercy? Never heard those songs. And he just taught it to me. So it was really, it was very different than the folk picking that I was used to. It was really this kind of syncopated piano, big band kind of approach. And it just floored me when I heard it. It's the first time I heard it. And I was just hooked. And I went back, my mother drove me to the lessons, and I went back as often as I could. And taped every lesson and went home and learned from the tapes and things like that and really studied his music. Looking back, it was just really lucky that I just happened to call him up and went out there and discovered his music.
Well, you've just produced a film about the Reverend Gary Davis. Yeah. Why did you make that film?
Well, I think a number of reasons. I had the audio for my tapes, for my lessons, for about 50 hours of tapes. And I stopped playing his music for years, and when I got back to acoustic music, I kind of realized, you know, Reverend Davis became this American icon, but there was not a lot known about him. And I just always wanted to tell his story. And I think in terms of the history books, he never really got his due, because he really wasn't a blues singer, per se. He was a gospel singer. So he never quite fit into the categories. You know, the blues historians always have the, you know, the Mississippi blues, the Alabama blues, everything is kind of nice, you know, codified into a nice, the blues tree kind of thing. And Reverend Davis was always Blind Gary from North Carolina. So he was kind of a footnote in the history books. And so, and his music is so rich and so so diverse and complicated. And I think that's the other reason that he was not successful in his own days. He never really influenced a lot of people of his own generation. And he recorded in 1935, then disappeared. So there's just a lot not known about him. And then when people started picking up his music in the 60s, people like Jack Elliott, Yorma Kalkin, and Dave Bromberg, Bob Ware, the Grateful Dead, and then his name started to come up again. And so I thought it was just time to kind of tell his story about what he was about. I think there's a number of reasons that he's not well known in terms of someone like Robert Johnson, or, you know, his music wasn't that kind of sexy blues music. It was more gospel. And he preached a lot during his music. And that wasn't something that audiences wanted to hear outside the church. And plus, his guitar playing was very, very complicated, and so it wasn't easy to imitate. So I think there was a number of factors that led to him being obscure. And so the film was my way of, my tribute to him and telling his story, you know, getting his story out there to a wider audience. And when we made the film, I didn't want to preach to the choir. I didn't want to make it a film for Reverend Davis lovers. I wanted to make it for somebody who never heard of him. And that, hopefully we've accomplished that. And you know, from the response of here at the festival and at film festivals, it seems like we have, and it's really rewarding that people, wow, I never heard of Davis before. What a great story. And they go out and find his music. And so it's very nice feeling.
There's a great quote in the film, because he really was kind of a guitarist's guitar player, and one of the speakers in your film, Jorma Kekkonen, from Jefferson Airplane, said that it was, when he met the Reverend Gary Davis, he said it was like meeting Elvis, only better, because Elvis couldn't fingerpick.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, Davis was a big star back then, you know? I mean, to those of us who were into guitar and he was the Reverend Davis. He wrote all those famous songs, and he was just a great player. And the one thing about him, which was interesting, he wasn't a blues player, so he was very accessible. So when you approached him, he was very nice, and when you wanted to study with him, he said, yeah, he was very proud to be a teacher. Whereas a lot of the blues guys, you know, they weren't so forthcoming, let's say, in kind of sharing their knowledge. So with Davis, he was very honored to teach you. So he was approachable. It's great that there's a big resurgence in his music and people are discovering him again. And the one thing about the Reverend's music that I think was very accessible back then, his religion was part of his humanity. And he played a lot of secular songs. He was a street musician. So he played novelty songs, bawdy songs. So he couched his music, the religion was part of his humanity. It wasn't just a straight religious message. But he didn't play blues, because blues was the devil's music. And you know, back then, you're either a gospel musician or a church person or or a blues person. So I wasn't allowed to play blues in his house, for instance. You know, it was like a no-go. But other than that, he played pretty much anything. You know?
But he did start out playing blues, didn't he? I mean, you, in the film, tell the story of him as a young bloke in Carolina. He was born in South Carolina, I gather. Yeah. Ended up playing tobacco warehouses. Yep. Can you just tell an outline of his story and how the tobacco warehouse fits into that?
Sure. Well, he was in Durham, North Carolina, where the tobacco industry was. And basically the tobacco merchants and farmers would come in and they'd trade in the warehouses. And they'd hire the local blues musicians for entertainment. And then it was Reverend Davis and Blind Boy Fuller. They lived in the town and they would hire those guys to play for the Saturday night dances. And they would walk the streets playing blues. So blues was part of his life back then. And it was a bawdy life, a rough life, I'm sure, and a tough life. I mean, imagine, you know, being blind and walking the streets in Durham, North Carolina in the 20s and 30s. Not so, you know, not a pleasant picture, but somehow he survived it. And somewhere in the late 30s, he found religion. We're all not sure why and what happened. And I think also the religious community was a kinder community. And maybe he thought it was a way of being taken care of. But he was really a true religion. He really found religion, and he was a true believer. And not like, unlike a lot of other preachers who were so-called preachers. And so when he found religion, he gave up the blues. And he, at some point in the 40s, moved up to New York. And he met Annie, his wife. And again, we're not sure why he moved up to New York. Maybe there was more opportunity there. And that was the interesting part of the film when I was making it. You know, I was with him for years, and I never thought to interview him. And there's so little I knew about him. And there was a 15-year period where we don't know really where he was. So there's so little known about him. And we had one or two interviews and my tapes. So we tried to pull together the story. So from the late 30s to probably the 50s, when John Cohn met him in New York, we don't know where he was. He was probably walking the streets of Harlem in the South Bronx and trying to make a living. And then basically, it wasn't until the 60s when Pete Seeger put him on his radio show, and people like Yorma and Bob Ware and Dave Van Ronk and the folk scene in New York, Happy Trail, they all kind of discovered Davis. He was in New York, and when the folk music revival came up, Davis was just around, and they'd invite him to Hootenannies, and so he became a fixture in the folk music scene. And then he got a little bit of success from the Peter, Paul, and Mary song, Samson and Delilah. They recorded one of his songs, and so that gave him a little bit of royalties. And those of you who'll see the film, there's the funny story in the film is Peter, Paul, and Mary recorded his song and they wanted to give him credit, to give him royalties and give him some money. And when they were at the lawyer's office and everybody, they sat around, they said, well, Reverend Davis, did you write Samson and Delilah, recorded by Peter, Paul, and Mary? He says, no, I didn't write it, it was revealed to me. So that's just who he was. And he never complained, never was bitter. And anyway, from that royalties of that song, he got a manager, started to concertize, and got off the streets. So when I met him, he had the house, and he was not a street musician any longer. And when you look at his whole life, it was really just the last 6-7 years of his life that he was off the streets, and he had a little modicum of success. And, you know, that's when he was a success, quote unquote. And I was lucky enough to meet him at that time, where he had nothing better to do than play concerts and teach me guitar. So I was just extremely lucky.
You read about Samson, you read about his birth. He was the strongest man that ever lived on earth. One day Samson was walking alone. He looked down on the ground, he saw an old jawbone. He lifted up that jawbone and he swung it over his head. When he got to moving, 10,000 was dead.
If I had my way, if I had my way in this wicked world, if I had my way, I would tear this building down.
The American folk trio, Peter, Paul and Mary, and their version of the Reverend Gary Davis song, Samson and Delilah, which for some reason they've titled If I Had My Way. And it's from their 1962 debut album, simply called Peter, Paul and Mary. A folk album that went to number one in the States. And royalties from that recording helped the Reverend Davis and his wife Annie move off the streets and into their own house for the first time in their lives. the start of a brief period of success for the blind gospel musician. On RN and Radio Australia, you're with The Rhythm Divine and our special guest, Woody Mann, an American guitarist who studied with the Reverend Gary Davis until his death in 1972. We're at the National Folk Festival in Canberra, where Woody was one of the headline performers. Well, Woody, can you give us an idea of the style, maybe the gospel style of the Reverend Gary?
Well, yeah, I think his whole approach to music, other than obviously the message, was the gospel. He played gospel guitar, where he would play the melody on the guitar, and he would play a song, you know, like, I'm gonna run down our city, and I won't have to run no more. I'm gonna sit down on the banks of the river. God knows I won't have to run no more. Yeah, so the melody would be, you can kind of hear the melody in the song. I'm gonna sit down on the banks of the river. God knows I won't have to run no more. You know, and back then nobody played like that. They would just, you know, play the chords, and the melody would be the vocal line. But he had this whole way of playing where the melody was part of the arrangement. They had that soprano, alto, tenor, church bass kind of chord leading. And it was very almost early jazz chord melody approach to playing. And it was extraordinary. It was just beautifully complex but yet rhythmic and swinging at the same time. And so he would do tunes like that, and you know, death don't have no mercy in this land. Death don't have no mercy in this land. Come to your house and it won't stay long. Look around, somebody will be gone. Death don't have no mercy in this land. So don't need the vocal to express what the tune is about. I think that's what made him very singular, very unique. And couple that with his voice and the shouting and screaming, and when he sang a tune, he felt it and you felt it too. And many times in my lesson he'd be shouting and screaming, and a couple of times I went to church with him, and he really got the message, and he really got the feeling and helped you to get the feeling. That was a very inspiring performance when he played.
As you said, he was ordained, I think, in the Baptist Church, the Free Baptist Connection Church, and I guess for him a lot of the songs were part of almost a sermon. He wasn't performing, it was a service in a way.
That's right. I think that's exactly right. I think the music was part of the sermon. Like, he would talk and all of a sudden he'd preach it, and then he'd break into a song. And then midway through the song he'd stop, go back to preaching. And so the music was absolutely part of the whole concept. And when you went to church, the music wasn't a performance. It was to play for the people, and the people sang along, and they were part of your singing. And I think that perhaps might be one of the reasons he developed his way of playing, because nobody played with that melodic kind of approach. So yeah, it was all kind of mixed up. And plus he had that ragtime secular side, so his music was very, you know, he had that raggy way of playing at the same time. So to me, his music is sort of gospel ragtime, if there was such a thing. And the church was very kind of swinging, and you really felt it rhythmically. And it was a beautiful thing.
Spirituality and music. The Rhythm Divine on RN and Radio Australia.
In the film, a couple of people mentioned this, that he was almost at the end of a line of performers of that style. Why do you think he didn't become better known?
I mean, as a performer, I think one of the reasons is religious message. I think that was really for a specific audience and not a secular audience. And I think as a performer, his guitar playing was very complicated. So he influenced a lot of people. They tried to play like him. But it wasn't like a Robert Johnson or a Mississippi John Hurt, where you could play his music and just, you can it's accessible. And also Davis disappeared. He disappeared in the late 30s, and he emerged in the 60s, in the early days. And I think at that point he was influential to the white musicians in New York. People picked up on Candyman and Cocaine and his, you know, these kind of complicated ragtime songs, you know. Those kind of things, and so he was influential to a small group of people. But I think also, and that was the other reason I wanted to, part of the reason I'm making the film, his music is very rough and rough-edged, and sometimes he's a little out of tune, and he really cared about getting the message across. So it wasn't finesseful in a way, and it turns a lot of people off. When they hear his music, the first thing they go, whoa, that's really like, wow, really hard-edged, and you know, it's hard to get a hold of. And to me, there's a beauty in his music that's even past who he was as a performer. He wrote great songs. So as a performer, he was very rough, but his music, there's a real elegant beauty to it. And I wanted to bring that out in the film. So to me, he's sort of larger than who he was as a performer. His music is larger than who he was as a performer. And I think that's a lot of it. He didn't have that ease of performance, very rough-edged kind of thing. And that's why his music sort of lives on, not his performance. So people play his songs, Candyman, 12 Gates to the City, Death Don't Have No Mercy, Cocaine, Delia, Banks of the River, tunes like that. So people are now doing interpretations of his songs, but they're not kind of imitating him, because it's just too damn hard. And also, it's who he was, you know. It's like a lot of performers. If you take their performance away from their music, there's nothing. But if you take the music away from Davis, you still have great songs. But I think if people give it a chance and they get past the gruffness, they'll discover something really beautiful. And the other little thing is, he was alive in the 60s and he was recorded quite a lot. And so in my opinion, he was over-recorded. And he made too many records. And I think because back then he was Reverend Davis, so if people offered him money, he'd make a record. And so many times he'd be tired, his guitar would be out of tune, and he was an old man. And so there's a lot of records out there that he's not at his best form. So you have to kind of cull through the good records. There's many of them out there, but you have to know. If you go to Amazon now and look at Reverend Davis, there's like 40 albums, and it's like, which one do you choose? So there's three or four that I'd recommend that people get, and if you get those, I think it'll turn you around.
What
did I? okay. Well, I think the ones in the early 60s when he was in his prime, Harlem Street Singer, Guitar and Banjo, Have a Little More Faith. The anything that was recorded in the early 60s would be, if you have to pick two, to get Harlem Street Singer, which is the name of the film. And that was recorded in New York City. And that's kind of his classic tunes, where he's really in great form, he's got a lot of energy, singing terrific, and his guitar playing is unbelievable. Yeah, I would recommend that. Yeah, the one thing I love about Davis's music is what you can do with it. Like I said earlier, it's they're great melodies that are open for interpretation. So when I play his music, I'm obviously inspired by him, and I learn from him and steal his licks and all that kind of stuff. But I don't think about playing it his way. And his songs, they just lend themselves to interpretation. So I kind of play his music and absorb it in my way. So I could play a couple of tunes that are sort of Death Don't Have No Mercy and Keep Your Lamp Trimmed and Burning. Sort of an interpretation of Reverend Davis's Death Don't Have No Mercy and Keep Your Lamp Trimmed and Burning.
A former student of the Reverend Gary Davis, that's Woody Mann, speaking to me at the National Folk Festival in Canberra in April this year. His new album is called A Tribute to the Reverend. And Woody is also a filmmaker whose new documentary film on the Reverend Davis, titled Harlem Street Singer, is opening this week in New York, 60 years after the good Reverend released his own debut album. Well, details about the film, Woody Mann and his music, and of course the Reverend Gary Davis, as usual, are on the Rhythm Divine website, along with audio to stream or download. I'm Jeff Wood. Catch you again next time, I hope. But for now, that's the Rhythm Divine.
Death don't have no mercy in this land. Come to your house and it won't stay long. Look around, somebody will be gone. Death don't have no mercy in this land. Keep your lamp trimmed and burning. Keep your lamp. Keep your lamp trimmed and burning, 'cause this old world is almost gone. Keep your lamp. Keep your lamp. Keep your lamp, 'cause this old world is almost gone. Preacher, don't you stop preaching. Preacher, don't you stop preaching. Preacher, this old world is almost gone. Sister, don't you stop singing. Sister, don't you stop singing. Sister, 'cause this old world is almost gone. Keep your lamp. Keep your lamp. Keep your lamp. 'Cause this old world is almost gone. Keep your lamp. This old world is almost gone. Preacher, don't you stop preaching. Preacher, don't you stop preaching. Preacher, this old world is almost gone.
Reverend Gary Davis once said, "I have no children but many sons, and I guess you're one of them."
I never thought of it that way, but that's a real honor that you say that. Yeah, it's great. Thanks for having me on the show, and enjoyed it.